there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Okay, Dr. Batar, just pause for a moment because Super Don just sent me a picture of himself right now on the air, well, sort of on the air, with his Robert Scott Bell Show t-shirt, like Generation 1. Years and years ago, I hadn't seen that for so long. I was like, I had to acknowledge it. We got to post that. Very cool. Because we got to do updates on the organic non-GMO, the Power to Heal is Yours t-shirts, and get one for Dr. Batar as well.
Super Don's not on the show tonight.
Well, he is here, but I can't get him to get visual yet, and we're working on it. So he sent me a picture. So I'm dealing with that. I'm okay with that for now, and I appreciate it. But I had to acknowledge because I forgot about the first generation Robert Scott Bell Show t-shirts with an American flag on it from years ago, and it's still in great shape. I'm telling you, Super D, do you never wash it or you never wear it?
I never take it off.
it's become part of your skin, so it's like, okay, I don't know where you begin and it ends. Okay.
I thought the Super Don is here. I thought he wasn't on the radio tonight. Okay, now I got it.
No.
You
I'm just trying
me off there.
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to plug it into where we could advance the video portion of the show to include visuals of others, including one day yourself too, if that's possible. And again, we're doing second best for now. We're going to make it work. Since I just had an organic cupcake for my wife, all is right with the world. I'm going to turn the show over to you and Super D.
Okay.
Oh, you're easy, Dr. Batar. No battle at all. Okay. Listen.
I'm like, whatever, yeah.
Whatever. He's okay. Like, did you have some CBD before we went on the air? Did you get that yet?
No. I hasn't arrived? I have not used it yet. I haven't tried it, but no, I have gotten it. Maybe I'll try it tonight.
Wait till after the show.
I need it tonight.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Wait till after the show. I don't want you falling asleep early on me. the first article here will not make you fall asleep because it's more vintage RFK Jr. That guy knows how to research. He knows how to write. And even though he's not quote-unquote a scientist, I get that he really does read the science. And he formulates it back out in these articles that are very comprehensive. And the newest one is called The Interwoven Global Epidemics of Mercury Toxicity and Autism. Did he nail it or did he nail it?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, Robert. I can't, I was a Boy Scout. I can't lie. I haven't read it. I'm just being honest. But
no cupcake for you.
Yeah, no cupcake for me. Yeah, I probably need a cupcake. I probably need something. But I have not read it, but I am familiar with how he writes it. He does write very well. And I will definitely read it. And go from there. But
I will say, from what we've discussed over the years, what I know you know and that I know, I have to say it's very, very comprehensive. Each time he puts this thing out there, it gets a little better, much like what we saw with Del Bigtree's presentation. We've been lecturing and speaking and communicating on these things, but so many more people are now doing it that these ideas get, bandied about, digested, chewed up, spit out, looked at, and then we get better at communicating this, like we saw with Dell's presentation at The Truth About Cancer. And I think this is true about this latest article that according to this, came out just today on the interwoven global epidemics of mercury toxicity and autism, talking about multiple avenues of exposure, multiple mechanisms of toxicity. He goes into great detail of the interaction with sulfur compounds in the body, the immune activation and autoimmunity aspect of it, protein synthesis, brain microtubules, membrane transport, glutathione, metallothionein, zinc, and copper. I mean, dude, this guy is outrunning most scientists the way he's weaving all of this together the way it should be.
Yeah, well, the thing is, just the title itself, the global epidemic of mercury toxicity and autism, it's a very inclusive and comprehensive title, and that is exactly what I believe, that this is a global epidemic. You have not only the amalgam load that the mothers carry, the maternal amalgam load, but then you've also got the vaccination load, and then you've got the environmental load, which obviously includes the combustion of fossil fuels and the mercury from the fish industry and just all the other avenues of mercury toxicity. So, you know, methylmercury is a very big thing, and they talk about that in the fish industry quite a bit. But methylmercury is actually a very small component of the overall mercury burden.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take the vaccinations, you take the maternal amalgam load, you take the combustion of fossil fuels, you take the methylmercury from the fish, et cetera, there's, it's all over the freaking place. I mean, you can't avoid it. The only way you can avoid it is if you're a hermit. And even then, you know, living up on the top of some mountain, even then you're going to get exposure to the fossil fuel combustions that, you know, is going to still going to end up affecting that area, because you go up high up in the stratosphere, maybe the air is cleaner, but still you're going to get mercury vapor up there. But that's basically the only way you can get away from it if you're living in a bubble. Otherwise, it's inundating us all the time.
Well, on some kind of filtered ventilator as well, as you said, airborne. But I think in terms of strategies of prevention, you know, for the typical adult or even child, we've talked about the role and the importance of selenium again, how that may be as important or more so than when we talk about detoxification because of the displacement that these heavy metals do. And that if we have, you know, an abundance of these minerals, we're less likely to succumb to the most devastating impact. It doesn't mean we're not impacted totally, but maybe we can minimize it. And hopefully in the meantime, if the burden is high enough, particularly as with children being vaccinated or with the amalgams being put into the teeth still in dentistry, that then we would take the more aggressive and important and perhaps necessary action we've argued for in terms of synthetic amino acid intravenous introduction via chelation.
And I think that that's one of the components is, you know, the removal of these metals. How do we effectively remove them? Well, obviously, the process of chelation is the most effective way. And binding the heavy metals or chelating the heavy metals with a chelating agent that pulls out the offending substance without being absorbed in the body, utilized in the body, so it's inert. Whatever goes in comes out, except it's not bound to the metal. So besides that, then you've got other things that are not necessarily chelators, but that are help, that they help to bind and to excrete, but they can be utilized in the body because the body will assimilate some of the stuff. For example, the reason the DMSA is not a good chelator is because it's dimercaptopropanosulfonate, DMPS, dimercaptopropanosulfonate, but DMSA, dimercaptosuccinic acid. Succinic acid is the largest substrate in the citric acid cycle. So when you end up having something, you know, in the Krebs cycle, it's the largest substrate. So when you have something like dimercaptosuccinic acid, the only difference between succinic acid and DMSA is two hydroxyl groups versus two sulfhydryl groups. So when you put it into the body sees it as succinic acid and actually utilizes it in the Krebs cycle, which causes an inhibition of FADH2, which then causes a further electron transport chain disruption and causes a problem with the ATP production, adenosine triphosphate, which is how the release of ATP is how we our bodies work from the utilization of energy. So whenever we eat something, it eventually gets converted into ATP. And if there's a disruption of ATP synthesis, then the body isn't going to be able to function properly. And we see that with children that have had DMSA where their bodies become more flaccid, their response is different. They go through a hyperactivity, and then they go through this flaccid, you know, passive state. So DMSA causes all sorts of problems. So that's an example of something that people call a chelator, and it is classified as a chelator, but the body utilizes some of it, so it's not a true chelator. And then you've got, you know, minerals that can bind, like selenium and some of these other things you talked about that help to displace the metals and the body needs. So how do we effectively remove this environmental toxin, not just mercury, but all the metals? And how do we facilitate an improved garbage pickup in the system, if you will, method of excreting these toxins. And then, of course, there's various pathways, various predispositions to the genetic pathways that we have, you know, whether it's like the glutathione transferase issue, whether it's a methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase enzyme issue, or, you know, we can, for every one that we can name, we spy you out 1,000 we haven't figured out yet.
Yes.
And so there's all these different aspects that we have to look at. But, you know, for me, Robert, it's very, very simple. Reduce the amount of mercury in the environment. Just stop using it. Stop putting in vaccines in the fuels, and stop putting it in dental amalgams, and just stop using it. And it, obviously, we're still going to have some from the environment. We're going to have some residual. There's going to be combustion of fossil fuels. Okay, so we're going to get some of that. But that doesn't mean we have to add insult to injury. Right now, we're putting under the green movement, all light bulbs have a mercury component in there. So now we're just increasing, like as if there's not enough mercury in our immediate environments, we're just increasing it. So that's one of the things we need to eliminate this.
When we go to the medical conferences around the world, and, you know, there are a lot of exhibitors, companies, you know, most of them, you know, I say trying to do their level best. I'm not saying every product out there I definitely would do, but I recognize there's innovation out there. We try to do the most from the least, right? It's that martial arts concept or kung fu. Get the most from every movement, right? We don't want to waste any of our efforts, time, et cetera. And so what you've done over the years is refine your approach and continue to do so. To how do we achieve these goals in a simpler way, a more rapid way, without shortcutting and without harming the patient? And, you know, there are 1,000, as you said, 10,000 different things that we don't even know yet and will still be open to learning if we are open to learning. So when we go to these conferences and people are confused about the fact that there are so many ways, well, that's the nature of nature, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's a good way of putting it. We have to, however, be judicious in the use of certain things that will increase the exposure to some of these metals. And I think that's where the key is, because there are other ways of creating preservatives without using mercury, but there are other ways of creating fillings without using mercury. There's other ways of doing things without having the use of mercury. So it's inhalation. If that's not enough, then let's put it in the food that we're eating. If that's not enough, let's inject it into the body. If that's not enough, then let's go ahead and implant it in our dental filling so that's outgassing at 5 to 9 nanograms per deciliter per tooth per day. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I think that if you start to look at how toxic mercury is, and it's the second most toxic substance known to man, according to the Centers for Disease Control, and then you start seeing how it's utilized all the freaking time everywhere, then you start thinking, well, there's something else going on here. Why would we be using the second most toxic substance in so many various industries and introducing it into the human body? Why? It's obvious why. To me, it's obvious now, because if you know it's the second most toxic, it's the fastest way to start to affect the health of the masses and reduce population.
You said it. I don't disagree. Whether it's an intent of everybody involved or whether it's just, well, it's just happening. It almost doesn't matter at some point, but you have got to take steps to protect yourself, to remove that burden as best you can, and we continue to try to do that. And if you haven't been to advancedmedicine.com, there's a great series of ways you can plug into for free. We'll let you know more about that after the break.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Every once in a while, your humble host with an occasional, I don't know, some people say I don't have a bad attitude, but some kind of attitude, has to come out and tell all y'all that.
Yeah, well, I don't want to sound like a d- but I told you so.
I told you so.
Of course, this concept was also revealed in the 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away by Dr. Rasha Bittar. The fact that pesticides, not good for you, not designed for any human or animal consumption. Synthetic toxic poisons that have never before been anywhere in recorded history in the natural world. Now, they might be synthetic analogs of things they learn about from the natural world, but it ain't the same. But Dr. Bittar, doctors, not you, but other doctors, all those years ago when I started on the lecture circuit, I talked about how important it was to clean up what goes into your body, that it does matter, even at parts per million. Now the Journal of the American Medical Association, the JAMA Journal Internal Medicine, acknowledges at least one aspect of what I've been saying, that pesticides are reducing fertility, particularly in women. Anybody surprised?
I'm not.
I mean, come on.
Persistent. So the reason we call these chemicals to fall into the category of second toxicity in my 7 toxicity philosophy, let's fall them to the persistent organic pollutants. Persistent organic pollutants are there, obviously the toluenes, the benzenes, the fluorinated hydrocarbons, you know, all these different chemicals that we're talking about. And it's not just fertility aspects. I mean, it's all different aspects. You've got generational fertility issues, where, you know, second, third generation people, when they're exposed to this, not just the people that were exposed, but their progeny and their grandchildren will end up having problems with fertility and other types of issues as well, chronic diseases such as cancer and heart disease and many other things, because these chemicals are altering the biological terrain, they're altering the immune system, they're causing a disruption in the various metabolic processes. So there's a lot that happens, and the implications are so significant. Mm-hmm. We can't even fathom what the implications are on the biological system. And sometimes it takes years and years and years before they become evident. Remember, on one of the previous shows, we talked about the Dirty Dozen. I think it was only 2 weeks ago we talked about the Dirty Dozen. And all those chemicals that are in the Dirty Dozen, those 12 that the global community has recognized as being dangerous and shouldn't be used in global commerce, all of them had been used. All 12 of those Dirty Dozen had been used for over 50 years on a commercial level globally before they finally said, hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
This stuff is bad and we shouldn't be using it. So now just imagine what kind of damage that those chemicals for 50 years caused before they were finally recognized as being dangerous, and how many others have only been used in global commerce for maybe 5, 10, 15 years and will be utilized for, you know, decades before they are also classified as being dangerous. And there's hundreds of thousands being developed every day.
Can we say 1 in 2 men, cancer, 1 in 2.5 women at this point, cancer? And could it have anything to do with these pesticides? Again, we're never ones to say it's only the one thing, right? Even though we can point to mercury as the primary culprit in, for instance, what's called autism and a lot of neurological degeneration diseases, we're not here to say that none of the other things matter. But some stuff is more devastating at lower levels than other things. And to have this come out in the JAMA Internal Medicine, I'm thinking of just sending this to everybody that I've met over the years. It's like that kind of turn the other cheek. Oh, there's Robert again talking about eating organic. I'm like, all right, do you want your kids to have kids? Just tell me. If you don't, then okay, keep eating the toxic pesticide GMO Monsanto food, if you can call it food. You didn't believe me? Read the JAMA Journal. All right? They're catching up.
And I'm actually surprised that they published it, but it's good. Maybe it's indication that, you know, things are moving forward in our society.
Well, and I mentioned this before you come on the air. I say this a lot when you're not here. I talk about, who do I talk about the consciousness shift with more than Dr. Bitar? Over the years, we've been doing the advanced medicine together. We are not shying away from consciousness shift, the veils of illusion being lifted, and we're seeing it in many areas of life, whether it be government. You know, the fact that Trump's in there busting things up, people are freaking out about it. I'm not. I think people need to see through the lies, the things, you know, maybe we learned something from JFK's release or not. I don't know. But what else? The fact that pesticides cause cancer or infertility. The fact that in Hollywood, in the highest reaches of global corporations and government, they do horrible, evil things, not just sexual predation of adults, but kids. This is something that, you know, nobody really wants to talk about, but in order to break the cycle of recurrence, we got to shine the light on it, and we're going to continue to do so. Toxins on all levels, including emotional, all of these things that are multiple layers of toxicity that Dr. Bitar talks about in his international best-selling book, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. More powerful healing and another story by CNN coming up next.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Making sense out of medical propaganda. Here's Robert.
It's not that we don't have fun on the air. We do. But we're having some fun off the air, behind the scenes. If you want to check it out, go to robertscottbell.com. You can see the simulcast on YouTube. Get to chat a little bit during the breaks, too. So, Dr. Bitar, we often talk about the emotional aspects of health and healing and the spiritual aspects of health and healing. And for the most part, you know, when we talk about like overcoming cancer or helping someone to overcome cancer, we talk about their attitude. Very important to have, you know, an attitude, a zest for life. You've talked about, and you told the story on stage like you've told it on here with the young boy who, didn't he have an amputation as well? And you, he was told he wasn't going to live, and you kept telling him about what's your first car going to be, what about your girlfriend, your date for prom, and you started giving him this vision for the future, and he's still alive and well today and wrote you that beautiful thank you. But that was not due to necessarily a pessimistic attitude.
Well, that's exactly right. It was actually comes down to the single most important thing in life, and that is belief. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, sometimes belief can be really difficult to have when you go through certain things, and actually right now I'm going through something that is, but Robert, you remember at the Truth About Cancer, I said that it was the worst day of my life.
You poured your heart out and no one had ever, you know, everybody said that was the most heartfelt presentation they'd ever seen, not just that you had given. And I've seen you speak a lot, too, so I enjoy you speaking. But, man, oh, man, we were blown away, and a lot of people were crying listening to you just let it out. And so I can't imagine that that's over, right? These things are tremendously powerful in our lives, and we're transiting through them. And, you know, amazing that you made it to the event, much less communicated so clearly what you needed to communicate for people to get well from cancer or maybe not get it at all.
Well, I think that during the first part of the presentation, I realized why that had happened at that point. And in fact, as I told you, I want to talk to you afterwards. I mean, it's amazing how certain things, when you think of them in a certain way, and then how, let's just put it this way. Today is a very difficult day, and I've had quite a few of those. And still, when I look at, I'll just give you an example. When I looked at my son today, mm-hmm. my 12-year-old who's going to be 13 on Thursday, it puts it all into perspective, and you see the beauty in the child's eyes, you know, looking back at you, mm-hmm. and whatever you're going through, it makes you recognize and realize how beautiful life really is. And a person that was a spiritual guide for me, I guess you could say. She was actually a patient, and I haven't talked to her in almost 19 years. And strangely enough, she called me day before yesterday, and I haven't heard from her in almost 19 years. And she had told me certain things that would happen in the future, and I don't really hold a lot of credence to that necessarily. I don't put a lot of value in that necessarily, because I believe in free will, but she called everything like this unbelievable. And even to this day, everything she said back then has come true to fruition. And so she reminded me again, it's very comforting to hear a person who 20 years ago told you something, never asked for anything, didn't do it for personal gain. I even said to her, how do you thank a person that gives you bad news, but tells you the truth and you can feel it. And she said, you've already given me that blessing when you told me, 20 years ago, like she was talking to somebody a couple of days ago about what I wrote about in the book about the pork and this and that. And, mm-hmm. but it was amazing when I talked to her. She said that she has never seen a human being that walks under the light of God that I do, which, do you know how that makes a person feel? I mean, especially when you're in a dark place.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Time. Yeah. And she reminded me that. I mean, she said, I told you that 19 years ago. And she goes, you're still the only person I've ever seen like that. Now, it could she be blowing smoke up my behind? Maybe she was. But I'll tell you, there have been times when I have had there's absolutely no reason or rhyme to understand why things are happening. I've said a prayer of thanks, and that's exactly, in fact, I'm here talking to you now. Yes. And I forgot to say my prayer of thanks for what I'm going through right now. But I can tell you, Robert, mm-hmm. life is beautiful, and life is beautiful. Our mutual friend, Alden, once said that perhaps this is hell where we live. And when we finally get it right, then the Creator takes us back, and that's when we're in heaven. Mm-hmm. But this world that we're in is hell. And if this is hell, then it's a pretty amazing hell, and God truly is the most gracious, the most merciful.
Well, in philosophy, I remember reading Sartre, and of course the big thing was hell is other people. And you can kind of play with these words and say people are karmic manifestations for the purposes of purification, because some of the most difficult people in the world to me have been the most beneficial to me, because I've learned and I've grown, and of course the ailments and the illnesses I suffered, I could curse it at the time. There were times I honestly did, because why me, oh Lord, why am I suffering? And then I look back at all that my life has become, specifically because of the hard times I went through, that I wouldn't have learned the things in any other way. Now, I'm not saying we couldn't choose to learn in another way, but for me, that was the way I chose on some level to learn it. Maybe I didn't know I chose it at the time, you know? But it is comforting to know that you are a co-creator in this, that you're not a victim through this, and that other people sense that. And when you need it the most, they say, you know what? The light is just pouring through you.
Well, we're definitely all co-creators, and there is never anything, as Napoleon Hill said, never anything that happens without an equal or a greater silver lining to it. It's just difficult when you're experiencing it, but I'll tell you, when I look into my son's eyes, and he's not like a little baby or anything, you know, he's almost 13 years old, but when I looked in his eyes, by the way, you're going to be at Ty's award.
Yes,
dinner, right?
I will see you and your son, I imagine.
Yes, you will.
That'll be
in
great.
December, so it's just a... It puts everything into perspective, Robert. I guess.
Yeah. I know our youngest kids are of similar age. You know, my daughter's almost 13 as well. And, you know, just there's such a light that pours through them at that age as well. As, you know, the future, the potential is just all there and forming. And all you want to do is just give them the love that they need to get to that next step, wherever, whatever it is. And, of course, they end up giving it back to us more than we can ever imagine.
Exactly, exponentially. It's one of those things. You put in X and you get 10 times X back. And so
exactly,
I am blessed, even though I'm experiencing some things right now that I wish I wasn't. I am truly blessed. I'm blessed to have you and Super Don and Ben on the boards. I'm blessed to have all my friends and relatives and health and, you know, getting stronger by the day. And, you know, it's really, really, really good to be me. And I did not feel like that when I got on the show tonight. I was definitely down, but I'll tell you, Robert, mm-hmm. sometimes just the right message comes through, and I'm not sure what the hell happened. I'm not sure what what Super Don just maybe, you know, burned some incense while we were on the show and I just came through the radio wave.
I blame him, yes.
But life is what you choose to be. And, you know, I don't know how much time do we have, but I'd like to give somebody, people on that are listening to us, a trick that I had developed.
Yeah, we got a few minutes left in this segment. So, yeah, carry on.
Okay, so let's talk about this. This is very important. I don't know how much of this I actually said during the presentation on stage. I don't believe I did get an opportunity to say this. And if I did, I went through it really fast. But we as human beings cannot control the thoughts and the memories that enter our head. Even if a person says, don't think about that or don't allow that memory to come into your head, the more you try not to think about it, the more it comes into your head. Mm-hmm. So we know that we can't control that. However, what we can control is the emotion associated with that thought or the memory. So with a cancer patient recently, we talked about this. I think I talked to you about this off the air once, Robert, too, mm-hmm. Maybe a couple months ago. But I was talking to a cancer patient. And he was talking about this intractable pain that he had from a car wreck that he sustained pretty significant injury, which ended up becoming a chronic back injury or back pain.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him about this technique, and he said, well, how do I change the memory of this car accident? I said, well, you don't change the memory. You change the emotion. He goes, okay, well, how do I change an emotion? I'm, you know, it was a bad accident. I've been having pain. And every time I think about it, just elicits that pain. I said, okay, well, what were you doing when you were driving and you got in that car accident? What were you, you know, where were you going? What was your plan? Where were you driving to? And he said, I was actually going to the beach. I said, okay, well, now tell me what's about the beach? What do you enjoy about the beach? And he said, the sun and the sand and the water and the warmth and all these different things. I said, okay, now you take that emotion that you feel happy at the beach, and every time you think about that car accident, and you have to practice, it's repetitive. You got to keep on doing it more and more. Mm-hmm. And the more you do it, the better you become at it. But you replace that emotion of what it feels like to the beach. So whenever you think about a car accident, you remember, well, I was on the way to the beach, and this is what I felt at the beach. And the more you practice it, the more that emotion of the beach will replace the emotion of the trauma associated with the car accident. Now, here's the analogy. Think of it this way. You have the choice of thinking of the car accident and the trauma of that or the memory of the beach, putting the emotion of the car accident or putting the emotion of the beach to mm-hmm. the memory of the car accident. It's your choice. It's similar. I was trying to explain this to my son and to my soon-to-be ex-wife a couple of months ago, but this is how it comes out to be. You have two glasses of water. One is full of pure, crystal clear, clean, refreshing water. The other one is full of contamination, metals, pus, and persistent organic pollutants and manure and other garbage. Mm-hmm. It's your choice which glass you're going to pick up and drink from.
Yes.
You can pick up the glass that's full of the crap, or you can pick up the clean glass. And it's your choice which one you drink from. That's what you got to remember. Those glasses full of clean, refreshing water versus the contaminated and dangerous, toxic chemicals and materials, those are the emotions. And it's our choice which emotion we drink from.
Well, and you, to add to that, Dr. Bitar, I was just thinking in terms of co-creation, when you really master this, you recognize that you filled both glasses.
Yes, and that's exactly right.
Right.
That's it right. You created, you filled both glasses, and now it's up to you to choose which one you're going to drink from. Because this is one of the things, too, Robert, we talked about. You cannot appreciate the light until you've experienced the darkness.
Exactly.
The more darkness you've experienced, then you appreciate that light even more.
Well, Mini Nikki says, we love you, Dr. Bitar. Thank you. Our friend Dr. Jockers posted today that when God wants you to grow, he makes you uncomfortable. And again, I think we agree in that co-creation aspect. It's like a handshake to some degree. You go, okay, we're ready for more, right? No stagnation here. We got to keep growing. Got to bring more of that love in. In order to do that, we got to burn the things up we don't need any longer. And that can be difficult. But, you know, that was the interesting thing. You used the imagery of those two glasses in that CNN article about pessimism. And they were talking about some form of definitive pessimism, or I don't know what they call it, but a kind that seems to be more pragmatic as opposed to being a doggy downer about it. It's just kind of being prepared for things in any which way it comes to you. And I guess there's practicality to that, but we don't want to live with the expectation of the worst, just the acknowledgement that if it happens, we can manage it, move around it, through it, around, whatever we got to do. Folks, we got one more segment of advanced medicine. We're really getting advanced here as Dr. Bitar continues to bare his soul, these experiences to help manifest that which is better for you as well. Thank you for being here. We'll be right back.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, rocking the health world with Dr. Rasha Bitar, Advanced Medicine, advancedmedicine.com. Links up in the show notes, robertscottbell.com. Yes, Dr. Bitar is going to get that Docs Who Rock Award as well, whether he can be there or not. I'll be there. I hope to see all of y'all there. There are tickets available if you want to see it, doctorswhorock.com. Linked up in the show notes. Thanks to Super Don, robertscottbell.com. We were talking about CBD and Dr. Bitar, another aspect of, you know, a lot of people with anxiety, deep stress scenarios will take this because it's not going to make them high, right? It's from the hemp plant, and it's one of the cannabinoids. This is called cannabidiol. And there are more and more studies coming out to validate it's not only its use in so many things, but also what I've seen clinically in the few years I've been integrating it, too. And this one came out of the University of Washington. I don't think it's WashU St. Louis where you were. It might be the University of Washington in Washington State. But they were utilizing it to treat a mouse model of autism. And they have used light therapies in the past in these studies, but they tried CBD. And they're finding that they're having a validatable, you know, alterations in certain behaviors. I'm not here to say, and you're not here to say, CBD is a mercury chelator. That's not what we're saying. But can it help with brain and neurological function? It seems to be that they're confirming neural protection and neural regeneration.
I think that the evidence so far is that it certainly has helped. And I don't know much about that, Robert. I'm going to be using it more from the analgesic perspective for some of the patients and from a helping them to rest and recuperate perspective, but I don't know much else about it. I've learned is actually the historical perspective from Ty and some of the medical perspective from you. So I'm looking forward to trying it and seeing how it works with some of my patients. But I have recommended to patients over the last year and a half, 2 years.
Yes.
And for some people, it's really helped.
Well, and my concern, of course, is, you know, we're in and I don't say this negatively, a Wild West scenario. There's so many people jumping into CBD, and that's fine, okay? I get the freedom. I love the freedom, and I argue for the freedom. But if I'm utilizing it for myself or my family or people that are coming to me for help, I need to know what I'm, you know, providing to them or recommending to them. And that's why, you know, I've had such great success with my friends at CB Sciences. I connected, I think, with Stuart Tomp, my buddy. And I know that I'm getting, they're validating it, and that's important to me. Because there's a lot of stuff I'm just not sure what it is. And I know that if it really is CBD, it's not going to harm me or anyone. but I need to know that I can have an impact that's consistent, because we begin to learn from these people what is most likely to be needed. Now, with these autistic studies, they're talking about the social anxiety aspect of the child who may be diagnosed into that spectrum. But this, again, I say this doesn't preclude the need to detoxify these children and get the mercury out, but could it be a safe option? And as you said, too, even for pain management, which we've used it for my wife for 6 years, so we know it has tremendous benefit, very little, if any, detriment we've found.
Yeah, I'm hoping that just the history part of it allows more and more people to start using it, because the historical perspective of the use of hemp and how it was considered to be a gift from the creator by our forefathers, and how it was ostracized, you know, 100 years ago, and the reasons behind it. It's an amazing story, and I don't think most people have even a clue as to why hemp hasn't been used as prevalently as it should be, mm-hmm. and how versatile it is, from fabric to, you know, shampoos and oils and medicinal and therapeutic and all sorts of different things. So I'm pretty excited about the possibilities of hemp.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see how your interaction with it is. Again, I'm not saying it's one size fits all. You know me about all of these things. I try to find out the appropriate way, and of course, different dosage levels, different concentrations. But as I've seen, the worst that has happened is that when I took a lot, I got very nappy. So I was like, I'm just very relaxed. But I didn't start seeing things. For me, the room didn't get dizzy. I know you can take a lot of anything that's even so-called natural, and it could be problematic, but I haven't found dangerous implications for taking more than you need at this point.
Yeah, and I think that for most people, it's most of the narcotics out there, I know that they're dose-dependent, but that this is being natural, I don't think that there's any issue with that.
Yeah, again, but I want consistency. That's why I connected you with my friends at CV Sciences, so we'll talk more about your experience with that, and as you integrate it with the patient population, I'm curious too, because, again, we covered a story earlier today about the opioid epidemic, and it's not getting better, but we already have safe options. Even if the government doesn't officially sanction them, we don't wait around for that. Dr. Bitar, we're out of time. Man, what a great episode. I appreciate you letting loose on what's in you, what's happening to you to help others, to give you the love that you deserve and gratitude that you deserve, and that we appreciate so much here each and every week when we do Advanced Medicine together. So if you don't mind, tell them what they need to know before we got to go.
The power to heal is unequivocally
yours. The Robert Scott Bell Show.